This is a podcast from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, a nonpartisan research institute that explores budget policies and issues affecting low and moderate income Americans.
I'm Michelle Bazzi, Deputy Director of Communications. Welcome to this policy briefing.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. And with me are a number of center analysts who've been spending the last 3.5 hours looking at the new census data on poverty, income, and health insurance. Today's census report is grim. It shows the nation lost substantial ground in 2008 on poverty, income, and the number of people who are uninsured. There's much data in the census report. I'm going to cover several features of it that stand out, and then we'll go to your questions, and we'll be happy to cover an array of additional issues that you may want to talk about. Starting with poverty, the number of people in poverty jumped by 2.6 million to 39.8 million people. What is striking is that that is the largest number of people living in poverty since 1960. The poverty rate, which is the percentage of people living in poverty, rose to 13.2%. That's the highest level since 1997. I would also note that the number of children living in poverty rose by nearly 750,000, by 744,000, and 19% of all children, just under 1 in 5, lived in poverty last year. The census data also show that poor families became poorer in 2008. That is, those who were poor fell farther on average below the poverty line than those who were poor a year earlier. The story on median household income is, in a sense, a mirror image of the story on the poverty rate. If the poverty rate rose to its highest level since 1997, real median household income fell by $1,860 to its lowest level since 1997. Now, I would note that these figures are particularly grim, not primarily because 2008 was an unusually bad year in terms of these data for the first year of a recession, but rather because 2008 followed an economic recovery that had a really disappointing record. Poverty was actually higher in 2007, and median income for working-age households was actually lower in 2007 than during the 2001 recession. This is unprecedented. It's never occurred before during an economic expansion. During economic expansions, poverty normally falls, income rises, and then when the next recession hits, you're at least starting from a higher level of income and a lower level of poverty. What happened here is the recession came after an economic expansion that failed to do the job in terms of income and median household, in terms of poverty and median household income. And so the inevitable increases in poverty and falls in income that you get in any recession are coming on top of a starting point that's unusually high for the end of a recovery. The health insurance data are also instructive. Now, they show that the percentage of people who are uninsured remains statistically unchanged at 15.4%, while the number of people who are uninsured jumped by 682,000 to reach 46.3 million. The story wasn't worse because gains in public health insurance programs, that's government health insurance programs, especially for children, helped to offset the continued decline in employer-based health coverage. Let me mention two figures that sort of, when you put them together, they tell you this story. Despite the recession, the number of children without health insurance actually fell. It fell by 801,000 in 2008, and it fell despite the recession because of expansions in government health insurance programs for children. But on the other hand, the number of workers without coverage increased by 932,000, evidence of the continued erosion of employer-based coverage. What's of particular concern is that virtually every figure I just mentioned will almost certainly look considerably worse a year from now because the economy has weakened further in 2009. Unemployment has risen sharply in 2009. And, of course, poverty increases and median income falls when unemployment climbs. As a result, we now expect the number of people in poverty will, in 2009, likely hit a 50-year high, while the number of people who are uninsured will climb again and start climbing toward the 50 million mark. Moreover, even though the recession now appears to be ending in terms of GDP data, in every recent recession, the unemployment rate has continued to rise in the last few recessions for something like 15 to 19 months after the recession hit bottom, and most economic forecasts call for unemployment to continue rising in 2010. If that's the case, then we actually could face 2 years, not one, 2009 and 2010, in which all these figures become worse for two more years before they begin to turn around. I'd note that the expected increases in 2009 and 2010 in poverty and in the number and percentage of people who are uninsured would be substantially greater if it weren't for the economic recovery law enacted in February. We issued an analysis yesterday based on census data, which found that just looking at seven provisions of that law, tax credits for working families, expansions of unemployment insurance and nutrition assistance, one-time payments to seniors and veterans, that from those seven provisions alone, will prevent an estimated 6.2 million Americans from falling into poverty. Now, I should note that's using the alternative poverty definition that counts non-cash benefits as income. What I'm saying is that while poverty will undoubtedly rise in 2009 and 2010, the increase would have been far greater were it not for the Recovery Act. And, of course, these figures don't take into account whatever effect the Act is having in preserving or creating jobs. Let me close with a couple of policy implications as I see them. First, obviously, health care. Today's figures, I think, underscore the need for comprehensive health care reform. The decline in job-based coverage is unabated. It's leaving millions of Americans uninsured or underinsured. And as the census data show, the economic decline in 08 didn't fuel an even greater drop in insurance coverage only because of the expansion in coverage of public insurance programs. Bills that are now before Congress would help to address this problem in various ways. They would strengthen both employer coverage and Medicaid. They would offer new health insurance choices for Americans. They prevent insurance companies from denying coverage or charging exorbitant amounts to people with medical conditions, and they seek to slow the growth of health care costs, which is essential. The main reason employer coverage is declining is because of employers' response to mounting health care costs. Now, I'd also note on the health care front that today's figures on poverty underscore the importance for health reform bills not to be designed in a way that has the unintended effect of increasing poverty among families and children by making it harder for low-income parents to find jobs. Unfortunately, a provision in the draft bill that Finance Committee Chairman Baucus circulated earlier this week would have that effect because it would make employers who don't offer coverage pay substantial amounts if they hire people from low-income families who qualify for help in buying insurance in the new health insurance exchanges, while not charging employers that don't offer coverage anything if they hire people from middle or upper income families to do the exact same jobs. That would depress hiring among people from low-income families and inevitably increase child and family poverty. The final policy implication I would note, I guess, is an obvious one. States faced with big budget deficits because of the recession are having to take tough actions to balance their budgets, as they're required to do even in recessions. The federal government, thankfully and appropriately, doesn't try to balance the budget in a recession, but we all know that the long-term deficits the federal government faces are unsustainable and action must be taken. I think one of the implications of today's report is that as states and later the federal government do as they must, sooner or later, face up to the music and begin to deal with these deficits, it will be particularly important for them to do so in a balanced and equitable way that does not deal with deficit problems on the backs of the politically weak, which is to say the poor to a significant degree, and that we not deal with our deficit problems by increasing poverty and making the poor still poorer.
This concludes the presentation portion of the briefing from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Thank you for listening. You can follow us on Twitter at Center on Budget, find us on Facebook, or create a MyCenter account at centeronbudget.org.